Good morning. It's good to see everybody out this morning. It's good to have visitors with us. We welcome you and hope to get to know you after services. Thank you for coming by and worshiping with us. Today I wanted to talk to you about something that's been on my mind. And we're going to look in the book of Romans. The book of Romans is very rich and very deep. And it has a lot of things that we can look at and understand. And there's some harder things that are hard to understand. And I want to look at that. It starts in chapter 1. And it's going to be the theme verse for the book of Romans. In verse 16 he says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek." And he's going to spend 11 chapters, that's going to be the main body of the book, going over this. And he's going to talk a lot about faith in the book of Romans. And then he's going to talk about the Jew and the Gentile, the Jews having the law and the Gentiles having creation to look at. And it almost seems as if the Gentiles are held accountable because they can see creation and know God. But they're still held accountable. But they need something else. And they need that first verse 16 of chapter 1. He says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel." The gospel is the means by which people are saved. He says, "For it's the power of God for salvation." That's what's provided through the gospel. But there's something we must do as people. It's a means of salvation to everyone who believes. So we must have a belief in that gospel. We must believe that gospel and live faithfully to it. There's one thing I've been looking at, and I think I understand it a little bit, and you can talk to me later if you don't agree with what I'm saying. He says a lot about creation. In chapter 1, verse 32, it says, talking about the Gentiles, it says that they know the ordinances of God. And how do they know that? I know partly it's through creation. But he gets into chapter 2 and verse 14 and 16. Says their conscience will excuse them or accuse, will be accepted to them or excuse them from the things they do. And I know our conscience shouldn't be our guide. Paul said that, didn't he? He was persecuting Christians, and he said he did those things in all good conscience. So our conscience shouldn't be our guide. But I think as I read chapters 1 and chapters 2 of Romans, there is something within us, and I hope I can unfold that good enough. This is going to be a two-part sermon, so I'm going to finish half of it today, and I still haven't finished the second half. I've got a lot of it done, and I've been deciding where to go with this. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at Romans chapter 1 and 2. And then we're going to look at some of the Psalms. The Psalms are very rich. Some of the Psalms of David are very rich about creation. And so we're going to look at a couple of those Psalms. And then we're going to look at Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 23. And that says something that's very significant for us to understand. And then what we're going to do next is we're going to go back to Genesis, back to the beginning. As you read Genesis chapter 1, and I know Jonathan's teaching this, if you don't read it, you don't glean what is there. Sometimes we just read over it. It seems like a very simple text. But as you get into Genesis chapter 1 is just an overall of creation. But chapter 2 gets into more detail. And in that chapter, it reveals something about Adam. And I think it's very important that we understand that because God kind of puts Adam to a test. He tests his creation to see how it's going to respond to things. And so that's where I'm leading up to. So one of the psalmists is going to ask a question. And that's the question, we'll get to that, and I want you to think about that. So let's start in Romans chapter 1. He says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, but the righteous man shall live by faith." And so I think that from faith to faith is pointing to the Gentile and the Greek. I'm not sure about that. But he also says something else, and I want to make a remark about that. He says, "For the righteous man shall live by his faith." He quotes from Habakkuk in Habakkuk chapter 2. What's going on in Habakkuk is lamenting over Israel. Israel is into idolatry. They're turning away from God. And Habakkuk is saying, "When are you going to bring judgment, Lord? You know, when is this going to stop?" And God says, "Look," he says, "I've got a plan. And this plan, I'm going to put it into effect. I'm bringing in the Chaldeans." And Habakkuk is like, "Wait a minute, you're bringing in the Chaldeans? This people is more wicked than our people." He says, "They treat people like they're animals. They carry them away in fishnets. They take pride that they're a warring nation and they can defeat any nation around them." And Habakkuk doesn't understand that. But God says, "The just shall live by faith." In other words, this nation's going to come in. It's going to carry you away. But you know what? You're going to have to go to that nation you're going into, and you're going to have to live as God's people. You're going to have to live by your faith. And that's something I want us to think about. This is kind of a side point. We're living in times now where I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. Our nation as a whole is just, it's just going so bad. And so I don't know what the plans of God are. But the plans that he has for us is that we need to live by our faith. We're justified in God's eyes, and the just shall live by their faith. And so whatever happens in this nation, and Romans talks about that in Romans chapter 13. It talks about our conduct as individuals towards our government. It talks about our conduct as individuals towards our neighbor. And it talks about our conduct of the hope that is in us as Christians. So we have to act properly. We can vote. We can do what we need to do to help try to transform what's going on in this country. But the just need to live by their faith in God. And I know that's a side point, but as I read that this morning, I wanted to say that. And so in verse 18, he says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them." So your translation may say is evident among them. So God has made it evident among us, the righteousness of God. And so we need not suppress the truth in that. So he says in verse 20, he says, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through that which was made, so that they are without excuse." And so we can see through creation, we can see invisible things through creation, through things that were made, through material things. And I want to say this about us. We were made so differently from everything else. You think about this pulpit. What it is about this pulpit that we're different from it? It's an inanimate object, isn't it? It can't do nothing. It does nothing. You think about the animals. What is it about the animals that are different from us? How were we created? And that's the thing we want to look at. How were we created as man and woman? What makes us so special to God? And so he says we can clearly see his characteristics through creation, his everlasting power, and his godlike nature. And he says, so they are without excuse. It says, "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculation, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image of the form of corruptible man, and of birds, and four-footed animals, and crawling creatures. Therefore, God gave them over in their lust of their hearts to impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions, for their women exchanged a natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way also the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire towards one another, men with men committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over. God allowed them to do this, to do those things which are not proper. Being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice, they are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And here's the verse I want you to think about. And although they know the ordinance of God, that is the righteous order of God, those who practice such things are worthy of death. They not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. And so God says, by my creation, you can know that I am the Creator, that I have everlasting power. You can know about my characteristics through creation, and you can know my God-like nature. And we see that in creation. We see it in the sun as it comes up. We see it as it sets. We see the moon as it rises. We see the clouds in the sky, the mountains with the snow peaks on top of the mountains, lightning, the great waves of the ocean, the whales, the mammals in the ocean, the storms, the fierce storms that God has created, in the forest, and the rain that brings us food, and the beast, and the stars of heaven. So God says that man is out excuse because he can see through everything he's created that there is a God. And so he says, therefore, in chapter 2, you have no excuse, every one of you who passes judgment. For in that which you judge another, you condemn yourself. For you who judge, practice the same things. And so he gets into chapter 2, and then in verse 11 of chapter 2, he says, there is no partiality with God. For all who have sinned without the law will also perish without the law. And all who have sinned under the law will be judged by the law. For it is not the doers of the law, hearers of the law who are just before God, but the doers of the law will be justified. For when the Gentiles who do not have the law do instinctively or by nature or by moral law, who do instinctively the things of the law, these not having the law are law unto themselves, and that they show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, and their thoughts alternately excusing or else defending them. And so he says that our conscience urges us to do what we think's right. But it's not always right. Our conscience should not be leading us. And so I want you to think about a couple of things. There's no partiality with God. You may not know what God's will is for you, but by nature you can know God and you can seek God. But you will be condemned by God if you don't seek God. And if you do know God's law and you stray away from it, you'll be condemned for that also. Brother Felipe, would you stand up and read the verse I gave you nice and loud so everybody can hear and understand what you're saying? Thank you, Brother Felipe. Isn't that a beautiful psalm? Brother Benjamin, would you please stand up and read for us?
Psalm 19:1-4.
Thank you, Benjamin. How many of you understood that? No? Nobody? We're about to read the psalm. Dan, do you understand a little? Just a smidgen. We're about to read Psalm 19. And in Psalm 19, it says something that's very, very deep in what it says. And so God says in Psalm 19, he says, "My creation speaks to the world." It doesn't have words, but it goes beyond all languages. And he says, everybody understands creation. To the Germans, they can look at creation and they can understand the same message we get as Americans. To the Spanish, those who speak Spanish, they get the same message from creation that we get. And that's what Psalm 19 is about. It says, God has created all these things in the world, and all these things are speaking to us. There's not a language there, but you know what? We all understand it. And so he says, there's no excuse for nobody in this world, anybody in Germany, anybody in Japan, anybody in China, not to see his creation and understand about God. So let's read Psalm 19. Psalm 19, verses 1 through 4. The heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. And so your translation may have their firmament. And so I was trying to think, what would be a good illustration for describing what that word means? So that word means, it brings the term, if I was talking about welding, a couple of you would understand that. We have convex welds and concave welds. And so a lot of people don't understand what that is. So I was thinking of a snow globe. If you think of a snow globe for a minute. And so you have a snow globe. And this side of the snow globe is convex. And so if you could get inside that snow globe and you could look up, you would see what's called concave. So this side of it will be concave. And so that's what David's writing in this psalm. He says, the heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. And so as you look up into heaven, it's not just flat, is it? As you look up into the stars, it's kind of like this, isn't it? Kind of gives you this idea where it's just never ending. It just seems to go on and on forever. And so God's handiwork is declaring the work of his hands. And he says, day to day pours forth speech. And so each day that we're here has its own lesson. You think about the sun coming up. What do we learn about the sun coming up? And settling down. We learn about time, don't we? We set our watches by it, don't we? We can count on that sun to come up and to set every day, can't we? We know there's 24 hours in a day. It's pretty amazing. I was looking at a video, and the sun is in the heart of our solar system, and everything revolves around that sun, and it's absolutely amazing. While we're revolving around, the Earth is rotating and the Earth is tilting. A couple of days ago, what day did we have? Yeah, the solstice, the earliest day of the year, right? And so we know, guess what's going to happen after that? Our days are going to start getting longer. So we know what's coming up for the farmer. Spring, he's going to start planting his crops. So day to day, every day, as that sun comes up and that sun goes down, it's teaching us. God says, day to day, you're learning lessons from this sun going up and this sun coming up and this sun going down. He says, and night to night reveals knowledge. And that knowledge is done by the very stars that are in the heavens. I want to read something to you. And I think it's pretty funny. I Googled it. You can Google anything. I wanted to know how many stars there were. I'm thinking, we're so smart. And we are smart. Science is very smart. But they have no idea. Who's a good mathematician in here knows numbers very good? Okay. I'm seeing anybody raising your hand volunteering. I didn't know we had such a number. So what they do is they look at the galaxies to measure stars, because it's hard to focus in on one star at a time. So they look at the galaxies and they're trying to figure out, we're in the Milky Way galaxy. We have 100 billion stars in our Milky Way galaxy. So they said that they estimate, and remember, they're estimating this, there's 10 trillion galaxies out there. That's what they estimate, 10 trillion galaxies out in space. And so if there's 100 billion stars in each galaxy, what do you think the number is? I never knew we had this number. So if you take 1 and add 24 zeros to it, it's 1 septillion. 1 septillion in stars, and they're not even sure of that. And so night to night teaches us something. It teaches us about God. It's enormous out there. And here we are on this small, tiny earth. And why does God care so much about us? What is it about us that He created us that He cares so much about us? Why would He do all this for us? So that's what we want to look at. And so, there is no speech, verse 3, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Their line or their sound has gone out through all the earth, and all their utterance to the end of the world. In them He has placed a tent for the sun, which is a bridegroom coming out of His chamber. It rejoices as a strong man to run his course. Its rising is from one end of the heavens, and its circuits to the other end of them. And there is nothing hidden from its heat. So God sends out a language that cannot be heard, but it can be seen. And you can understand that there is a creator. You can look at His creation. You can look at the sun. You can look at the moon. You can look at the stars. You can look at the animals He created. And you can know that there is a God. And so the world, brethren, is without excuse. And I want to make this point. Shame on us when God has given us the ability to be like Him, and we act like mere animals. A lot of that is going on in this country. And we as Christians need not to be like that. If you would, turn to Psalm 8, another Psalm of David. Psalm 8, verses 3 and 4. I'll pick up and I'll read verse 1. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is Your name in all the earth, who have displayed Your splendor above the heavens. Verse 3. When I consider Your heavens, the work of Your fingers, the moon and the stars which You have ordained. And here's the question I want you to think about. What is man that You take thought of him, and the son of man that You care for him? So if you can picture David sitting under the stars at night, looking up at that creation, he knows there's a God, and he sees this marvelous creation, the septillion stars that he's looking at up there, or how many's up there, and he asks a question, and he wants to know, what is man? Why do You take thought of us, God? Why is all this marvelous creation there, and yet You're caring about us? We're at the center of Your attention. Why is that? Well, let me tell you ahead of time. There's more to us than this flesh and this blood. You know, Paul says that we're in this tent and we groan to come out of this tent and be clothed with our heavenly tent. What is man that You care for him? Psalms 134, 139, if you'll please turn there. Another psalm by David. We'll read verse 1 down to verse 14, and then we'll have one more text, and then I'll do the second half of this sermon in a couple weeks. Verse 1 of 139. O Lord, You have searched me and know me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thought from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down. You are intimately acquainted with all my ways. Even before there was a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all. You have enclosed me behind and before, and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is too high. I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, and if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me, and your right hand will lay hold of me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light surround me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as day. Darkness and light are alike to you. For you formed me in my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. When anyone considers his own body, his formations, if you study the anatomy of the body, the mental organization of the body, we should be fearful. David says, you created me in such a way it brings fear to me. I am very fearful of the way I'm created. That fear should produce a reverence for God within us. When we think about the beating heart, just think about the heart. I don't know a lot about it. I was looking up some things about it. It's like a working engine. It's a muscle, and it's just constantly doing things. You know, a working engine is kind of like the heart. It has lubrication in there. The heart has a lubrication surrounding it to keep that muscle cool and keep that muscle working. The heart has valves in it. You know, a working engine has valves in it. Those valves open and shut. They take blood in and release blood. The engine has oil in it to lubricate everything. And it has valves. It has intake valves and it has exhaust valves, just like a heart. And I want you to think about that. We are so fearfully and wonderfully made. My heart's beating and I don't even think about it. I don't give a thought to it. And God made us that way. Our ability, you think about the early thinkers. They sat under the stars. And they came up with mathematical equations that blow my mind. Looking at the stars. Just, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. One more text, we're going to read that, and that'll be the text for next time we get together. In Ephesians chapter 5. First Thessalonians, I'm sorry. Got Thessalonians written down, I'm reading Ephesians. Verse 23, Paul writes, now may the God of peace himself sanctify you entirely, and may your spirit and soul and body be preserved complete without blame at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. Next time, that's what we're going to look at. The body, the soul, and the spirit. Three things that we're made up of. And we'll dive into that. We'll look at Genesis when we come back the next time. I hope this sermon's been helpful to you to understand that God cares about you. If you're not a Christian, God has revealed himself in creation. If you haven't taken time to really look at creation and study it, take time. Spend some time looking at it. If you're not a Christian, we're about to sing a song, and that's an invitation song. So we're inviting you to come forward, and you can make your request made known. If you want to become a Christian, we can do that. We can baptize you into Christ. We have water right here. If you're a Christian and you haven't been living the way you should be living, you can come forward and make your wishes known also. Why don't you do that as we stand and sing the song of invitation?